Dr. Ken Holtorf, it's such an honor to have you on this segment of a Regenerative Medicine Summit. And I'm so excited what we're going to be chatting about, because you're going to do a little kind of a streamlined way to look at how to manage mold and all the different things that count along with that. So I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. It's an honor to be on with you. And we're, you know, concentrating on, you know, SIRS, you know, chronic inflammatory response syndrome with mold, but it does hold for so many different illnesses. And, you know, when I discovered peptides, because I was sick with Lyme, Babesia, Bartonella, and didn't get better after 3.5 years of the highest dose antibiotics, you know, 7 at a time, 3 times a dose, would never give a patient, nothing worked. I went into heart failure. And then the cardiologist said, oh, maybe in 10 years you get 10% better. I'm like, I couldn't go upstairs. I couldn't stand up. I'm not going to live like this. And kind of went around the world looking at all these different treatments. Some things helped, you know, some crazy things. But I was in Belgium and took a bunch of peptides and then didn't think much of it and didn't really expect anything. And then like 4 to 5 days later, all of a sudden I walked up the stairs upright. And I'm like, wait a minute, what happened? You know, and then probably 8 months later, I'm back to my cardiologist walking in upright. And you go, well, that's interesting, you know, and did an echo. He's like, well, I've never seen this, you know, and I had so much damage. It was like fibrous from the high human transferring growth factor beta that you see. But did even ask me what I did. Okay, no. Just kind of incorporated that into, like, you know, all of our treatments. So, whether it be Lyme or chronic fatigue syndrome, or even now it's with anti-aging, all this stuff plays a part. And we found all these are so similar. And you look at like the immune panel of an autistic kid versus a Lyme person, they look very similar. And so, you know, correcting that underlying immune dysfunction is key. And then you have all these other peptides to do all these different things as well. And it's just been a game changer for myself and our practice and all the practices that you use peptides. And I know you use peptides in your practice. So I did an interview the other night with a person who never heard of peptides. And he's just like, you know, I can tell when he's reverse talking, he's just like, yeah, right. And then he starts, well, wait a minute. And then, you know, after we're done, he's like, wait, what, where, how come I haven't heard of this? You know? Yeah. So, it's great. And I see you guys do so many great, treatments and, you know, helping these patients that have really nowhere to go, and they're just treated, as you know, so terribly. And so I get so mad at doctors, but, you know, they're in a system that they can't do anything. You know, they got 15 minutes, and that's probably includes paperwork, so about 8 minutes to spend with the patient. I mean, I can't say hello in 8 minutes, right? And I know you're doing the same thing and treating all these, you know, incurable patients that are all psychological. You know, if a doctor can't treat, it's their fault. So my hat goes off to you. So and doing the summit.
And that's, I mean, that's a fascinating part, is that exactly what you're saying. If they can't fix the patient in 8 minutes or less, you know, to prescribe some kind of medication that fits their standard of care, then all of a sudden it is, and they're depressed or they're anxious and they need some antidepressants or anxiety medication or some sleeping medication or anything like that. But before we get in, because I just wanted people to get a taste of what they are going to be and be hearing from you, I wanted to go through so people know all the amazing things that you do. Kent Holtorf is the medical director of the Holtorf Medical Group. Holtorfmed.com, and you've had 22 centers and 9 franchises. I mean, that's
all my sins.
That's insane. And the founder and medical director of the nonprofit National Academy of Hypothyroidism. That's nahypothyroidism.org. He's the founder of Integrative Peptides, integrativepeptides.com. That's where I get my oral peptides. They're awesome. bringing doctors and patients the highest quality and natural bioidentical peptides as supplements with unique delivery systems and dedicated to training physicians about groundbreaking peptide therapies. He's recently started a pharmaceutical company, KJ Biopharm, that's kjbiopharm.com, and proceeding with IND clinical trials and unique peptide and biological therapies for complex immune-related conditions. He's an international known lecturer, author, and innovator in cutting-edge research and treatment, has lectured almost 100 CME-approved medical society conferences and summits that should tell everyone that this gentleman is in high demand, and what he says is really kind of the cutting edge, and he's a leader in the world in this area. He's on the Sterling Committee and lecturer for the A4M, International Peptide Society, and was the endocrinology expert for AOL Health. He has published multiple peer-reviewed endocrine review articles on complex multi-system, poorly understood conditions, which demonstrates that much of the long-held dogma is endocrinology and infectious disease is inaccurate. And we're going to be talking more about that. He's also a guest editor and peer reviewer for multiple medical journals, including the journal Endocrine. He's been a featured guest on numerous major news outlets and print media, including CNBC, ABC News, CNN, Fox News, Good Morning America, The Today Show, Discovery Health, The Doctors, The Learning Channel, The Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, US News, World Report, San Francisco Chronicle, WebMD, and Forbes, among many others. I mean, this is amazing what you've been doing. I mean, here you're barely walking up the stairs, and this is what you've done.
Yeah, you know, I was going to, you know, I said I would not live like that. And so every holiday, you know, I picked the date Halloween, I'm going to end it if I don't get better. So I got out there at 1 mile an hour, bent over, going to all these doctors. But I kind of knew, I felt, you know, that this is gonna, even though like I would never wish, you know, Lyme, Babesia, Bartonella on my worst enemy, that it's gonna work out where it's gonna help others in the long run. And that's kind of get me going. Yeah.
So you're talking a little bit about, you have this commonality, you know, with, you have all these different diseases, and somehow there's a commonality between, you know, among all of them. You're talking about autism, somebody with mold exposure, cancer. I mean, because medically, they're all very separate diseases, and they are separate individuals or separate type of doctors that deal with them. But what is that commonality if you would bring them all together, and how should we look at that?
Yeah, and really, I think the power of what we look at is, instead of, I think it's kind of done a disservice, you know, of all these syndromes, right? You know, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, Sears, and they meet this criteria. And it's, you know, Sears, I don't even think standard doctors even know about, but let's say chronic fatigue syndrome, you know, as soon as that person has it on the chart, it's like almost gives a license. It really does give a license to that standard physician to not dig any deeper, what's the cause, and just write for, you know, an antidepressant, or, you know, oh, you're just stressed out, let's get a psych consult. And, you know, we've had patients get a psych consult from the ICU, you know, and they just don't want to deal with it. And you get so mad that, you know, these doctors won't look at trying to find the underlying condition. But when they get diagnosed with these things or chronic Lyme, the infectious disease doctors say, we don't believe in it, you know? And it's like, you know, the old saying on doctors, like, if you have a chronic infection, don't go to infectious disease. If you have a hormone problem, don't go to endocrinologist. If you have, you know, it's that they just want the simple thing, or it's like endocrinologists are stuck on the TSH, you know? And I've written, you know, numerous review articles with, you know, 500 references each showing, you know, that will work in the person who is totally healthy, no stress, no toxin exposure, which everyone has, you know, no chronic illness, who's not older, that's okay. But if you don't, that TSH will leave these, you know, basically so many people undiagnosed. And that's why we started the nonprofit a number of years ago for thyroid. And I, you know, was really big on, and still am on, you know, T3 therapy and that, which the endocrinologists don't even want to know about, you know, because all their society conferences are basically funded by the makers of Synthroid, and they don't do it. So it's like, you know, and same thing with the Infectious Society of America. We don't believe in chronic. Like, how can you not believe it? It's just like, look at all these studies, like la, 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 you know, and they don't have the time to dig down, you know, and, you know, these patients aren't easy. But I couldn't do it in 8 minutes either, but they're stuck. They're not allowed to even, you know, investigate. So they're stuck, and so many doctors are very miserable, in the standard realm, but they don't know what to do, you know? And so they're not bad people, but they're kind of doing bad. It's a bad system, I will say. And then as you look at the underlying issues, finally getting to your question, right? The commonality we find is stress. Okay. Everyone thinks, oh, they're just stressed, but especially emotional stress, like, you know, divorce, death of a family member, things like that, you know, think, well, it lowers your immunity. Well, it doesn't do that. It basically is a number of things, but it changes that immunity. If you look at, you know, oversimplification, but you have to with the immune system so complex, that if you look at like this side is, you know, TH1 gets stuff inside the cell, TH2 and TH17 get stuff outside the cell. Now, normally when we're young, you know, your TH1's good, and then the thymus will regulate that, which is a gland inside your breastbone. But that starts involuting, you know, at early adolescence, and then starts dropping, the activity drops to around age 40, 45. It gets to a very low level, and that's when all these diseases of aging occur, right? And so it's like this. So you can't fight intracellular infections, cancer, but you have this TH2 and TH17. So you get all this inflammation, which is causing atherosclerosis, autoimmunity with TH17, all these degenerative diseases. And this side now cannot fight intracellular infections, but also cancer. That's when you start getting cancer, and we'll get too much into it, but, you know, the cells then go into T cell senescence and T cell exhaustion. And it's like for around a cancer, and you know a lot more about cancer than I do, but, you know, the cells around the cancer, you think they're fighting it, but they're actually almost protecting it because they're in T cell exhaustion or senescence from the constant stimulation. And they just, you know, and then what happens, the mitochondria, everything's a vicious cycle of medicine. So when the immune system gets bad, like, so the TH1's required to, when we have cells that go bad, the, you know, natural killer cells and the other TH1 side will go get rid of those cells. And we get rid of billions of cells a day, which is like, wow, that's bad. No, that's good, because otherwise the cells, you know, they basically cause a lot of havoc. They're like the hooligans of the, you know, neighborhood. And the mitochondria are going to, which cell, you know, cell danger response, which, you know, got a lot of play, but it's kind of part of the whole thing. And, you know, all these different things are kind of part of that, you know, the whole thing. And so the mitochondria start secreting inflammatory markers, reactive oxygen species, instead of making energy. And then they recruit more senescent cells. And then you get hypothalamic pituitary, you know, hormonal dysfunction, pineal gland dysfunction. So they don't sleep. It activates mast cells, which now you got brain on fire. And then it causes immune activation of coagulation. Like my blood was so thick, you could not take it out with a 14 gauge needle, you know? And I remember when I was in the ICU with sepsis, and the nurses were making a shift change. Or one saying, oh, this is that AIDS guy who keeps coming up negative for HIV. And because I had no immunity, my natural killer cell function was zero. Like, you can't give enough antibiotics to cure anything, you know? But you go to an immunologist, they don't even check your immune system. It's like crazy, you know? So I keep going everywhere else but your question. So stress is a huge part. Toxins, right? And, you know, so mold has, you know, kind of the thing with Sears, and that's kind of part of the diagnosis, although a lot of other toxins play a part. But you look, everyone's got heavy metals, glyphosate, I mean, just a mass of just, you know, toxic exposure, EMFs. In fact, there was an environmental conference, and I don't know, I'm ADD, so I'm kind of bored. So I went over to the bar and opened a USA Today, not on the front, but one of the inner front pages. They found this killer whale in Antarctica, you know, died on this iceberg. So they went and they did a biopsy of the fat, and it died from PCB poisoning, which has been banned for 40 years. But the stuff doesn't, it never leaves, you know? And so everyone's so toxic. And then the third thing is, which goes along with this immune dysfunction, that they get reactivating infections, new infections. And, you know, with Lyme, it's so controversial, but, you know, I think ticks are, you know, say it was from tick bites. And I mean, I think that's probably the fifth most common way of getting it. You know, you got sexual transmission, you know, basically in utero, I think is number one, but also mosquitoes, ticks, bed bugs, you know, all these things. And, you know, doctors here, they'll say they got Lyme. There's no Lyme in California, really. And well, wait, even at the park down the street, it says, watch out, you know, ticks with Lyme. But there's so many other ways.
They're stopped by the border. I mean, they don't dare to cross the state border.
Yeah, it's nuts, but there's so many other ways. And then we have, you know, so many co-infections, Babesia, Bartonella. But also when I say like Lyme disease, is that, you know, when I say it, usually they have numerous infections and then they get reactivating infections. So sometimes we don't even know what we're treating. We're treating a lot of things. But you know, like when you do get Lyme, the first thing it does is secrete cytokines to suppress that Th1. Then it goes inside your cell, and now it's chronic, and it lowers the Th1. So now you can't fight it, you know, and, it's scary. So many people are sick now, like, and also mold's been around forever. We've evolved with it. Why in the last 10 years is everyone, you know, basically sensitive to it? Or, you know, you'll have in the family, you know, there's one person who's just devastated by it. And because they have something else that's compromised their immune system, or their Wi-Fi is like right in their room, that we find a lot too. But it's, usually, again, people can get Lyme and no problem. In fact, the guy that they was it the Iceman? I don't know how I forget how many years he was, but he had Lyme disease, you know, and it may not affected him because his immune system suppressed it. We have so many infections that, you know, the body just suppresses it. And you look at, you know, everyone has, you know, human virus one, Epstein-Barr, CMV, but the body suppresses it. Then as that drops, now you get all this stuff. And that's why with, you know, when chronic fatigue syndrome was the thing, that was the virus of the month, because there's so many infections that they have that correlate, but is that really the cause?
So it's not really the infection per se that is the issue. I mean, the infection is there, we're all dealing with it. But it has a lot to do with our immune system, how it functions. And, you know, you're talking about Th1, Th2, Th17. So you have that teeter-totter, you know, between Th1 that's able to go after the infection, and then Th2, you know, Th17, that is that kind of inflammatory. And when that's very active, that's when you're dealing with a lot of that, you know, skin rashes, inflamed brain, you know, you can't function, arthritis, you know, rheumatoid, all these autoimmune conditions. So what can a person do? I mean, so what is it that one person can then have a good Th1 response versus another one that goes into Th2, Th17 with that inflammatory? What is the difference? I mean, you talked about like heavy metals, chemicals, you know, EMF, 5G, all of these. Is that the only factor, or are the other factors that play a role?
Yeah, I mean, it's like everything. You know, everything's multifactorial, and there's predisposition with genetics. but you know, genetics are not your destiny. And it's like, you know, with cancer, or you got the BRCA1, but it's people that have epigenetically changed their expression of those genes. And that's what's the nice thing about, you know, peptides. And why I wrote this, which I will have available for the viewers of this, is a Sears ebook, where it looks at, you know, the standard, and Richie Shoemaker's done an amazing job to, you know, basically give credibility to it and all the research. But what he does is try to get rid of the toxins to improve the immune system. Mm-hmm. And that's the final goal, which, you know, final goal is with, you know, VIP to adjust. But if you give vasoactive intestinal peptide with any inflammation, it makes it worse, right? But also I talk about how it actually makes it so you're basically going to relapse. It sends the immune system the wrong way. It's kind of like giving steroids. But, you know, it's why not go after the immune system first? And then you can detox and do all these things. And so, you know, this whole thing is, it kind of started looking at really a different protocol when I've had so many patients come in on binders, and they're like, oh, I know this is going to work. And, you know, and he's done some great work, and, you know, he spent his life doing this, and my hat goes off to him. But they've just been on forever. I know I'm going to get better. Like, well, how long has it been? 8 years, you know? And I'm like, I'm ADD. So like, if something doesn't work quickly, I'm like, well, let's move on. How about let's think of something different, you know? And, you know, and with the peptides, we've kind of become an immune modulatory clinic. And where we were doing the super high dose antibiotics and, you know, five at a time and doing all these treatments, where, you know, it'll take 2 years and the patients are hurting all the time, feeling terrible. And with peptides, we can get them, you know, here from there. We may not have to even need antibiotics, or for, you know, a couple months versus years. And so it's really allowed us to help. And then, you know, we're getting more of, you know, the anti-aging group. So it's kind of like, you know, with age, it's kind of like the same thing happens. And same thing happens with autism, with autoimmunity, MS, ALS. You know, we have ALS patients coming in the wheelchair and they're jogging now. And they go back to the neurologist thinking the neurologist is going to go, oh my gosh, what'd you do? Oh, I did this. No. They just basically say, oh, it's a misdiagnosis. I'm like, three of you, you know? And we had one cancer patient who had Hürtel cell cancer, and she went to a doctor who she considered her friend, and said, he's like, you got to get this out this week. And then I ended up talking to her and I said, well, give me 6 months, you know? And so we use a lot of peptides and things. And 6 months later, we just scan, it's gone. And so she goes back to the doctor thinking he's her friend. He's going to be happy. He won't come out of the room and tells the receptionist, tell her she's no longer a patient. You know, it is so weird to me. But we see the same thing, you know, with these complex illnesses. And for a standard doctor to do it, one, they're going to have to learn all these new things, right? And then they can't do it anyways. So I don't blame them why they're not interested. And kind of, it's just human nature. If you can't do it, they're not a bad doctor. So it's easier for them to believe it doesn't exist, you know, or it's psychological. And
the system is so stacked against them, and then also third party, you know, pay, you know, insurance companies, how they pay, how it's set up. I mean, so it's so stacked against them. So you really have to want to put yourself on the line almost to treat, you know, doing it the way that you're doing, and the way, you know, we're providing care that's outside the normal box that's been created for people that doctors feel safe within, you know. So it's hard. It's really hard. So yeah.
Our patients, you probably get this too, is that patients will say, well, this is so great, why doesn't my doctor know about it? You know, And so I wrote an article. It's on the National Academy of Hypothyroidism site. Why doesn't my endocrinologist know this? But you can plug it in any doctor and say, why is this? The Annals of Internal Medicine looked at this and they found most doctors are practicing 10 to 20 years behind what's available in the medical literature because they don't read medical literature. They don't have to, it doesn't matter because they can't adopt it anyways. But that's not the biggest issue, is that if you give a doctor 50 studies or 100 studies showing that what they're doing is not optimal, they don't want to hear it. No. My patients are different. They're fine. And it takes on average a proven new therapy that's significantly better than whatever's out there to get accepted in mainstream medicine takes on average 17 years, unless it's a drug. If it's a drug with the sales force, it gets adopted very quickly. So that's the thing. All these things we're talking about that are crazy, alternative, quackery, will be adopted in mainstream medicine in about 17 years.
So I'm curious. So you have an individual, their TH1 is low, they're not able to fight infection, they're inflammatory, their brain's on flame, their nervous system's on flame. So how do you and like we're talking about, it's the same with people that are aging faster because we have the scenario of inflammaging, that this inflammatory situation is driving aging faster. And obviously we want to stop that. And that relates to, what you call senescent cells or immunosenescent, where you have these, immune system is fatigued and exhausted and is not able to clear, unwanted cells, out of the system. So how do we address that? I mean, you mentioned then peptides and that these are powerful tools. You have this cancer patient using peptides and able to kind of shift that immune system function with it. So what is the strategy? Since, I mean, VIP is a peptide, and you mentioned that, if we do that early stage, it's just kind of like, fueling the fire almost. I mean, there has to be a late stage intervention. Where do we start?
Yeah. So, one thing I think is people, you look at their labs. I mean, we always know their immune system basically is going to be terrible. But also, I think our job is to show the patient, because they're going to go back to their doctor, going back to their friends, go, oh, this is crazy, And so kind of the key labs that we found, and we do, like 40 to 50 labs in a person to start out with, but a key marker of the downstream effect of TH1 is natural killer cell function. So natural killer cells are the cells that monitor your body for cancer, intracellular infections, and that. If you look at the studies on chronic fatigue syndrome, for instance, as an example, chronic fatigue syndrome, they say we don't know what it's from, but there's a lot of things. But 75% of those people have low natural killer cell function and 25% low natural killer cell number. So the problem is a lot of labs just do the number, so you can kind of miss it, but function is key, and it should be above 30 lytic units. Even though the reference range is low, and I called the lab, I said, this is crazy. The literature says different. They're like, well, we have to do our own tests. We couldn't get that many people, so it made the reference range really wide. But so natural killer cell function, looking at the TH1 and TH2, probably the best clinical markers are C4A and then human transforming growth factor beta, especially true with SEERS, autoimmunity, because this human transformed growth factor beta goes up, very inflammatory, but you'll read some studies and show that it's anti-inflammatory, which is interesting. But in the presence of IL-6, it totally changes. But that causes a lot of fibrosis, autoimmunity, and that's what happened to me. My human transformed growth factor beta was so high, it caused my heart to be fibrosed. And also chronic kidney damage, which I had kidney failure, heart failure. I mean, I could not remember. I'd go to dinner and my wife would basically, talk about, who are they? I've never, never heard of them. But I can remember medical stuff. It was very weird. So when that came down, I also had very high VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor, and it made my vessels gigantic. And I went to cardiovascular surgeon. He's like, what the heck? And, you know, and we're walking up the stairs, a little kid said, Daddy, what's wrong with his legs? You know, and it was just grotesque. But, and I got him sclerosed and they knocked out my greater saphenous and all this. And, you know, so, okay, well, it looked better at least. And then I got rid of the Bartonella and I have no veins, but yeah. So C4A, human tumor growth factor beta, and natural killer cell function. Now, Quest is the best place to get it, although they drive me crazy in terms of like LabCorp better to deal with. But, and I've talked to the medical director, said, you gotta fix your tests for these, you know? And also natural killer cell number can go up with senescence, you know? So it can lead you astray. But those are kind of the some of the key things. But you also look at CD4, CD8 ratio, because there's a vicious cycle, and you also get pineal, hypothalamic, pituitary, and then adrenal dysfunction, thyroid dysfunction, growth hormone, you know, all the you know, sex hormones and all those things, that looking at the T4 to T3 ratio or the T3 to reverse T3 ratio all show immune dysfunction. And so there's ways of looking at that. And then, you know, some of the lymphocyte subpanels and that, we find the cytokines can really throw you off, because a lot of times if you have, you know, low, the body's trying to raise that. So let's say, you know, a TH1 stimulating cytokine will be high and then, oh, you're TH1 dominant. No, because it's trying to raise that, you know? And a lot of times they're very unreliable, everything's zero and things like that. But, you know, basically looking at that, you know, kind of convince the patient, although we know they're going to be low, and even with just age, you know, but you know, what are some of the things that work very well? So there was probably the most popular was thymus and alpha one, approved in about 33 countries for infections and cancer. But when the study came out showing safe and effective for COVID, they banned it. So we went and did study looking, comparing it with metabolomics, transcriptomics, and proteomics, and looked at the combination of thymogen and immune peptide A1, actually mirrored that, was actually a more potent modulator of that. But also, and they're orally bioavailable, which is great too. And then, you know, a TB4, thymosin beta 4, probably one of the most popular thymosin. So, and also when you look at, you know, as a thymus and involutes, and even the CDC said that age individuals have on average at least one chronic illness just due to the thymus involution. Okay, so you're like, well, okay, giving thymic peptides back, totally safe. They've done toxic studies at 1,000 times the dose, IV people, and they can't find a toxic level. They can't find a toxic level. Why wouldn't you give that back? And that's what the studies are showing. Like it decreases all these, you know, basically chronic illnesses of aging, like, for don't want to get too off track, but they did one study, a 15-year study on individuals over 65 with significant heart disease. And they gave them six doses of a thymosin and a pineal peptide, Epitalon. You can also use pinealian. And they followed them. And they found the ones on normal care, okay, their cardiovascular system got worse. The ones on that combination, again, just six doses, their cardiovascular system got better. They had 2.5-fold less cancer, they had greater endurance, increased quality of life. They lived longer. They, you know, basically had less cardiovascular events. And then ones that they gave a higher dose for a period of time, they had a 4-fold decrease in mortality and morbidity. Like, why aren't we doing this for everyone, you know? And so, you know, looking at, you know, when you see, especially let's say, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme, SEERS, so you want to boost that TH1. So we'll typically use the thymosin beta 4 fragment, which, because the TB4 molecule is very long, so you can't take that orally. You can take it injectably, but it has a middle part that actually stimulates mast cells, which can be good for a healthy person, but in these patients, not so good. And so TB4 frag gets rid of that, and it actually goes directly and lowers that human transferrin growth factor beta, as well as that immune peptide A2. Also, is KPV. So melanocyte stimulating hormone, you know, everyone knows it as, you know, the thing to, you know, get tan, but it's probably one of the most anti-inflammatory substances in our body. And a lot of, you know, some of the sophisticated Lyme docs are using it as an anti-inflammatory. We're using it as anti-inflammatory for Lyme patients. And the problem is, say like melanotan 1 and 2, which was considered the Barbie doll peptide because people got tan and they lost weight and they reduced inflammation, weight reduction. They got tan, yeah. So, and felt so much better. But you know, I did it myself, and I was a little ADD. I'm like, this isn't working, and I turned just black as like someone painted me. And plus, if you're older, you get all these blotchy spots, you know. But KPV, just the last three peptides of the last three amino acids, is much more potent and will dramatically lower mast cell activation and inflammation. But it doesn't do it at the expense of the immunity. It actually improves the immunity, and it's very antimicrobial. It was shown to outperform like Diflucan at 1/100,000th of the dose, okay, and no side effects. It's anti-viral, antibacterial, and showed with like, you know, like the Staph aureus and things. And then you can, you know, use, you know, BPC and things, which is kind of the go-to peptide for, you know, people think it's a gut peptide. And it does work in the gut, but people don't think of it as orally for systemic. But every study that I have found that looked at, you know, compared oral to, they usually do intraperitoneal and IV, the doses were equal potent for the same effect. So, when we're at conferences, like we'll give people, if they're, you can tell they're, hey, what's wrong with your knee? Here, take these, talk to me tomorrow. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've had this for 8 years and it doesn't hurt. Or a dog, basically, if we don't, we'll give it to him a couple times a week. And if we forget, all of a sudden he starts limping, you know?
And so, how much, you would actually give them then oral BPC 157, how many do you give? I mean, you have your supplement that you offer that people can get. How many would you do? Would you give them 3? Would you give them 6? What dosage would you give them if you want to have kind of a impact so that they see a difference the next day?
Yeah, and so peptides, and it just maybe so people don't know, or I don't know, Nafisa was talking about peptides too. I don't know if people know what peptides are or not, but you know, they're small chains of amino acids, which just arbitrarily, if they're under 40 amino acids, they're a peptide. If they're over, they're a protein. But we didn't think much of them. And we thought like the master controller were hormones, right? But the peptides are like a layer above that, basically fine tune everything. And they're very tissue specific. And they work where hormones will go into the cell, go to the cell nucleus, you know, change protein synthesis. So it's kind of like, you know, building the factories. So they're slow on, slow off, and they have broad effects. So the peptides work on the cell surface, but have pleiotropic effects or signaling peptides, which cause a number of things, including, you know, epigenetic change in the gene expression. They work more like supplements, right? But just much stronger. And so I almost forgot the question, but in terms of, yeah, so we'll do the, you know, TB4 frag, the what we call thymogen alpha one, which combination of thymogen and immune peptide A2. We have also like cerebrolysin, which the cerebrolysin has been approved in over 30 countries for dementia and TBI, traumatic brain injury, given IV, but they banned that because it was too safe and effective again. But we found you can give it orally, and we probably get more like testimonials and feedback on that from, you know, people that, oh my God, I've had traumatic brain injury, I can't think. And all of a sudden, within just a few days sometimes, and it's shown to be, you know, orally effective because they're small molecular weight with EEG studies and things like that. And, you know, people say, oh my God, I can read now, the world is so different. And so we're getting better. Problem is peptides generally are not effective orally because they get broken down, and we're limited to what we can do as a supplement. We can't, you know, basically alter them. Now it's a drug, but there's different ways to get around that by delivery systems. And so I've got not only an army of FDA attorneys, but I just hired an army of big pharma scientists. And so we found some really unique ways to get these in the body. Now, one thing that we don't like, and if you look at, you may see like stable BPC out there, arginine BPC, and they call it stable because it supposedly stays in the gut longer, was more stable in the gut. But, you know, there's a number of third-party studies and show that acetylated BPC, so it's a kind of a cap on it. And the body will do that to peptides it needs to protect, and showing that you can sit for 24 hours. But regardless, we use enteric coated, it goes right to the gut. But as soon as a non-acetylated or capped peptide gets through the gut, it gets broken down. Plus, when you acetylate it, which is natural, the body does that, it makes it less polar, so it absorbs. So most of the people that do the stable BPC, they add a snack to it, which breaks open the tight junctions. Problem is, I don't know, I think you have the same problem. Most of our patients have leaky gut, and the last thing I want to do is break open their tight junction. So we won't go there in terms of increasing absorption, but we're excited. You know, I mean, it takes longer to think, and we're like right there, but, you know, getting it there, that we can really expand our offerings. So.
Well, I mean, one of the big, I mean, like you're saying, the biggest issue is that the majority of us are dealing with leaky gut or inflammatory, you know, a scenario along the gut lining. And we all know that, you know, when the gut is inflamed, the rest of the body is inflamed. You know, gut is inflamed, your brain is inflamed. So by calming down that inflammation and regenerating the gut lining, you know, with something like BPC, then you will also calm down the inflammation with the rest of the body, and you'll calm down the inflammation in the brain. And so there's no reason to try to get that into the bloodstream, you know, that's usually, I mean, if you can just work on the gut, you got 70 to 80% of your immune system right there. I mean, yeah. You got 30 plus neurotransmitters that's produced right there. You got all these nutrients that are produced right there. So by affecting things there, you're going to have a systemic impact that's tremendous.
Yeah. And people forget about the also, you know, gut brain, but also brain gut. And, you know, SIBO was a huge thing for a while. And I remember I was on a summit or a webinar, and I said, well, you know, SIBO is a symptom. And oh my God, they didn't like that. You know, no, this is the reason for everything. But people get SIBO because their gut is dysfunctional. So the nice thing about, you know, BPC will lower the inflammation, you know, kind of throughout the gut, antimicrobial, kill the, you know, bad bugs. And then TB4 frag actually directly goes after the tight junctions. And then KPV goes after the tight junctions and is the mast cells and all that. And it's a great trio, but it also affects the brain, gut axis. It goes to the brain and affects the brain gut axis. So now the gut starts working, and then which then makes, you know, the gut better and the brain, and, you know, everything in medicine is a vicious cycle, good or bad. And that's what you find, because people just take, you know, probiotics, but the gut's going to go back to the way it was. And like, you look at the studies on like obesity, and they have a different total strain, and so do chronic fatigue syndrome and Lyme patients. And so let's just give those. Well, they're not going to last. It's going to go back to the way it was because the environment is the same.
Exactly. That's a key. I mean, you can just take in probiotics and eating foods that feed the pathogens or the bad bacteria that were there. It's just going to keep colonizing that area. So, and for people then dealing with SARS or mold toxicity, dealing with that immune dysfunction with TH1 is suppressed, TH2 is, TH17 is overexpressed. So the key is then to kind of bring in, you calm down the inflammation along the gut with a BPC-157 as antimicrobial. You also then reduce some of the inflammation with the TB frag, and then also work on some of the mast cell activation with KPV. Does that seem to be kind of the strategy? And if you want to throw in some thymogen alpha 1 to get some of that modulation in there as well.
Yeah, and we'll use a lot of things. I want to make it seem like, hey, just give peptides, you're going to be fine. I mean, we love a lot of therapies, and, you know, ozone, and, you know, and I think LDN is great. It's kind of works for some people. It's kind of like the first thing you give to everyone. Plasmapheresis, we love, and, you know, trying to get rid of some of the toxins, where I think I even like phosphatidylcholine better than like EDTA and all these things. We'll also see immune activation of coagulation in these patients. So they tend to, like, the body will respond to infections, and they'll basically lay down fibrin, which traps the infections in that, basically in the cell wall. And then they'll start secreting antimicrobial peptide, which we also use, LL37, mm-hmm. Into that space to try to kill them. But like Lyme will basically cover itself in like a basically, you know, a different layers of like lipids. So it hides, it goes into her sister cells, where they're basically not alive or dead. They're just inanimate. So the body doesn't see them. You have all these antibiotics and da-da-da, and then they come back, you know. But yeah, so with this coagulation, now you have this layer of fibrin, good in the short run, but not good in the long run. And we find that the body can't get at it now. And also all the, you know, whatever peptides, you know, medicine, antibiotics, nutrients can't get in, waste products can't get out, and oxygen that takes 2 seconds normally to get in the cells now can take up to 2 minutes. So they terrible endurance, right? They get air hunger, which is a common symptom. And we find that, you know, giving heparin, very low dose, exceedingly safe, safer than aspirin, and also some vascular enzymes like lumbar kinase, natto kinase, and you clean that out, and you'll find that treatments you did previously that didn't work now start working. And like, we'll do like IVs, like, what's going on? It's not working. And then you get rid of that, and they're like, oh my God, the same things work. So, and even in the, you know, Shoemaker protocol, he has a couple markers for, you know, basically hypercoagulation, but in the ebook that they can get, we'll give them the whole panel to do, and really, you know, look at all these markers that you can use as that they correlate with symptoms, with disease pathology, and sometimes you want to directly go after it. And first of all, we'll see a lot of people with POTS, right? And if you ask the regular doctor, like, oh my God, it's a nightmare to treat. But we really don't even think about it, because when you fix the immune system, that goes away, you know? And another thing you'll find, that I did a study on, a review article on HPA axis, so adrenal, hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal axis, in chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. And if you look at the standard study, well, cortisol levels, you know, looks normal. But if you use sophisticated stimulation tests that looks at central, that 90%+ of those patients had adrenal dysfunction. And so you'll see these patients will oftentimes have a high ACTH. So it goes corticotropic releasing hormone, you know, will then stimulate ACTH to then make cortisol. They'll have high ACTH, but low cortisol. And now cortisol is very relative. If you're totally not stressed and healthy, you can have a low cortisol. That's good. If you're in the ICU with a normal cortisol, you're probably going to die, you know? So when we see that high ACTH, the body is trying to make more cortisol, and it's making corticotropin releasing hormone, which is a huge stimulator of mast cell activation. So someone's giving a little touch of cortisol, not like prednisone, just a little physiologic dose, and lowering that ACTH, you'll find that mast cell goes away and the POTS get so much better and so many things. In addition to, you know, directly going after the mast cells and looking upstream and modulating the immune system, because that TH2 is going to stimulate the mast cells. And yeah, I'm in the mast cell mastermind group, and it is the most smartest docs, the nerdiest docs I've ever met. And I mean that as a compliment, but they're still stuck on direct mast cell inhibition. Like, look upstream, you know? And it just works so much, so much better and modulate that. So all these, you know, mast cell activation symptoms, which are so many, right? And so many people have it, which we didn't know it. I didn't even ever heard about it, you know, when I started. So, but so many things are associated with that now. And yeah, you know, you got the POTS, you got interstitial cystitis, and thing is, it can cause it's a component of Lyme disease, and we'll find that too. If people get, you know, like stem cells, and they, oh my God, they just feel terrible. You know, they're a mast cell patient, but especially if they do their own, which I don't know why you want to give stem cells and you're sick, they're not working. That's a big part of the problem. And the peptides also, we won't do stem cells without giving peptides with it, because they will activate the stem cells. But, you know, and they'll take it from the fat, which they're all says, oh, those are the most potent, as the most. But you're also giving all this inflammatory mast cells and histamine with it, and they tend to just flare like crazy, you know, and they spend a lot of money to feel terrible, you know. So we usually won't do stem cells until we get their immune system under control, and definitely don't recommend their own. And you want to use, you know, young, you know, from the umbilical cord.
Yeah.
And exosomes as well. Like with exosomes, so the stem cells will, like we used to think that stem cells go to an area and they just transform into that cell, right? No, they don't do that. They'll secrete exosomes, which are like lipid package, which will protect the you know, whatever's in there. A lot of times it's peptides, it could be mRNA, and they can actually change depending on what's going on. But so you can you know, give those nasally, like in our autistic kids, it gets right to the brain, where stem cells are too big, they're not going to get through. But we've had a lot of great results with autistic kids that have been pretty incredible.
Using exosomes nasally.
And peptides. Yeah.
Yeah. So which peptides for like autistic children would you use? Would it be then the BPC and the KPV, or what would you use?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm loving KPV. It's a little tricky to formulate, but typically kind of the same things, immune modulators, you want to get that under control. The cerebrolysin lowers, you know, as well as the BPC and the other ones, and KPV lowers that microglial activation, because they all have, you know, their brain is just so inflamed and it's causing all these problems, and like, you know, insomnia, anxiety. And we found for insomnia, the key kind of little pearl is you give delta sleep inducing peptide, which is sounds like, okay, you take it and go to sleep, but it doesn't do that. What it does, it lowers the inflammation in the sleep center. It's actually the highest levels are in the gut, right? So that's interesting. Along with Epitalon, which is a pineal peptide, which is probably the most anti-aging peptide, or pinealion, very much the same, increases telomeres. It will modulate the pineal hypothalamic pituitary function. And they did some studies, these were on chickens, but they took out the pituitary and gave Epitalon, and their thyroid levels went up. I don't know. So very strange. That along with a growth hormone, or a, you know, secretagogue, something to raise the growth hormone. And after 2 to 3 weeks, all of a sudden they're sleeping again. Or narcoleptics no longer have narcolepsy. And then, you know, then you got, you know, a whole problem with this vicious cycle, mitochondrial dysfunction. So there's mitochondrial peptides. And one of our doctors had, well, one of her daughters was at UCLA, and, you know, high achieving and, you know, all this, which are kind of the people that get all this actually. And she kept pulling out all her eyebrows, no matter what they did, for, I think it was like 8-10 years. And went to everything, medications, therapy, all they couldn't do. We gave her 5-amino-1-MQ, which actually raises NAD levels in the mitochondria. 2 days later, never had a problem since.
So yeah. Mitochondrial dysfunction, yeah, in her situation then.
Yeah, which I didn't expect that. But mitochondria's function is huge in almost every chronic illness. And it will result in low thyroid, because people think of thyroid just diffusing the cell, but it's active transport, you know, diabetes, all the neurodegenerative diseases, autism, really. As soon as someone gets sick for an extended period of time, it affects the mitochondria. Even BPC will help the mitochondria. There's SS31, which a ton of, you know, there's a ton of clinical trials. It's more like a intracellular antioxidant. Oh, but I should tell you too. So ultimately stopped working, right? And we also MOTC, which also stimulates, and we gave her that too. And then it stopped working. Like, And then we gave her SS31, some MitoQ and PQQ, and it started working again. So I think we kind of over oxidized her mitochondria, but once we brought that back, we it started working again.
Yeah, because that, I mean, that's one of the issues, is that if you just drive the mitochondria and use those kind of therapies without having an antioxidant support, because the mitochondria will then, you know, when it's active, it'll produce a lot of oxidative stress within the cell. So you got to have that antioxidant support to balance that out as you're driving the mitochondria.
Yeah. And you look at all these diseases of aging, I mean, everything has to do with inflammation, right? And which is a big, broad term, but it kind of comes from the mitochondria and this immune dysfunction. And we find, also have a lecture on, you know, I love thyroid, I love T3 and all these, you know, sometimes we get these Lyme patients really sick. They've been to all the best doctors, and it just, you look and their TSH is normal. But we'll do like a Thyroflex, which measures the intracellular level of thyroid. Like the British Medical Journal showed that a knowledgeable doctor looking at someone's thyroid, look at someone's ankle reflex, was a better test than blood tests for thyroid. Well, how could that be? They found that a normal reflex goes, but the lower the thyroid, the slower the relaxation phase. So it measures via the computer. And we'll also take someone's basal metabolic rate. So see how many calories they're burning over the 10 minutes and then extrapolating that. And we find, or even just for like weight loss patients who have dieted, and some studies by Libel and others have been repeated over and over, that if someone significantly diets, kind of like starvation type diets, three cycles, their metabolism drops, and it doesn't go back to normal even after you eat. So when people say that I've wrecked my metabolism, you know, no one believes, oh yeah, you're eating bonbons in the closet at night and whatever, that we find that their metabolism in general, about 25% lower than normal. We'll see that also with the Lyme patients and the, you know, anyone chronically ill, the neurodegenerative patients. And so you got to get their metabolism back. And, you know, one way to do that is give thyroid, and they're all low thyroid, even though their TSH is normal. And there's ways to show that and also show the patient so that when their friends go, oh, you shouldn't be on thyroid, they found that for like Hashimoto's patients and all these Sears and Lyme patients, they have all these autoimmune things, but they never fit into a box. Like I had antiphospholipid syndrome for a while, autoimmune kidney disease, you know, and just all these things, especially because that human tumor growth factor beta. So you basically lower those things and all that goes away. And I was going to say something and I forgot.
The thyroid is such a key. And yeah. I see that, you know, with anytime you're dealing with any kind of immune system dysfunction, I mean, the thyroid is like the fuel, you know, that drives immune system. And that's one of the easier things and the cheapest thing to fix is to make sure that you have at least that. And people that are sick, they have that hypothalamic dysfunction, which means that, yeah, the TSH really doesn't show anything. So it's useless to really look at TSH. You got to look at all these other things, like you're mentioning, the reverse T3, the, you know, to T3 ratio, T4, T3. And, you know, so these become key. And so many people forget to look at, you know, do the antibodies show up? You know, do I have Hashimoto's? So there's so many people that are dealing with Hashimoto's and they never get tested for it. Yeah, because they look good.
Yeah, because the endocrinologists don't think that you can do anything about it. So they don't even test it. But yeah, so the studies show that patient with Hashimoto's, if you modulate their immune system, they actually feel better than if you give them thyroid. But we kind of do both. But like to show you the STAR report, largest study ever done on antidepressants, right? They had multiple antidepressants and they kind of used them like doctors use them clinically. And they found, you know, antidepressants work about 30% of people. And after a year, most of them stopped working. But they gave them all T3. Didn't matter what their levels were. They just gave them straight T3. And they found T3 outperformed the antidepressants with less side effects, right? But they didn't fund the study, so they didn't get in the abstract. You know, so, and also another study, 135 bipolar patients that were totally treatment resistant. They tried on average 14 different medications without any improvement. Okay, so 14 medications, nothing. Gave them all T3, didn't matter what their levels were. 80% responded and 35% total resolution of symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, that's criminal too. I mean, here you are then giving these individuals drugs that alters their ability to function in life, you know, and they can't really get off of these medication without serious implications. And here you have such a simple solution that can help them tremendously.
And it hugely affects their life and everyone around them. And yeah, and the problem is they have a low normal TSH and a high normal T4. So the endocrinologist goes, oh, you're kind of high thyroid. But because of pituitary dysfunction and the lack of thyroid transport into the cell, that's what you see. And that's the same thing we see with, you know, Lyme and autism and, you know, Sears and all these things. So they need thyroid, but the doctors go, oh, no, you're high. Well, in fact, you know, I think, you know, got some calls from endocrinologists. Oh, you're making the patient thyroid storm, you know, you're suppressing their TSH. Well, okay, thyroid storm, their pulse is 44, their body temperature is 96, they can't get out of bed, they're gaining a pound a week. Oh my gosh, they're just in thyroid storm.
Thyroid storm, yeah, it's amazing. And then you have the scenario talking about inflammation and depression, you know, where they see that if you address the inflammation, that will then improve depression much more than giving antidepressants. So, you know, using things like, you know, the anti-inflammatory peptides, along with also maybe curcumin or boswellia or something like that, that just calms down inflammation. And that's, I get so much more traction that way.
Yeah. And we're doing a lot more of kind of the, with these patients who've been sick for a while, is a senolytic therapy, getting rid of those bad cells. And I'm impressed. We just, kind of started doing it. And it's kind of hot in the biohacker world. But I think you're going to hear a lot more about that in the future.
And I'm curious about that. So you're using a lot of the rapamycin and metformin, those type of things, or what are you?
Yeah. So mainly you need, actually, one big problem is why they're not getting rid of, well, cells. You need high TH1, right? To get rid of them. So we want to raise that first off, and that helps a lot. But kind of the standard protocol is a med called dostavanib, which is a chemotherapy drug, so people freak out, but it's really immune modulator. And it's selective for senescent cells. And the senescent cells have a particular mechanism that they're resistant to standard, apoptosis. That will get it along with a polyphenol like curcumin, which is most of the studies, but picetin is another one that is a little more potent. And then there's a peptide called FOXO4-DRI, which is selective against senescent cells, but it's very expensive. So we're working to get that much cheaper and available to everyone. An enzyme that doesn't break this down, or you have a weakness in this part of your immune system. I lost you on the screen, but.
Yeah, let me see here. Here we go. Yeah, okay. Had a little. If you can kind of repeat, like, after the FOX4, I mean, I apologize. It's kind of get disconnected and then start it again.
Oh, no, that's why I couldn't do it at my house. I tried a webinar the other night with it and just cut off. It's like, it's temporary housing and it's so slow. But so with FOXO4-DRI, it selectively will knock out these senescent cells. And the only problem is it's very expensive and hard to get. So we're working on ways to get that less expensive and available to the consumer.
That's awesome. Well, Dr. Holtorf, I mean, you are an amazing source of information, and in the area of chronic disease. I mean, obviously Lyme, mold, all of these things. I mean, you've gone through the journey, you've been there, you've done it yourself. And look at you now. I mean, so you're living proof that what you do works. And then also when it comes to anti-aging, you're driving the technology, and that's really, my hat's off to you, everything you're doing. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and follow your work, and you're doing some amazing things as well, and putting on this summit. It's a lot of work. So I appreciate you getting the word out, and it's an honor to be on. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.